Helping Hand, weekly feature, HPR1 stations, and online at hawaiipublicradio.org. Friday afternoons, Helping Hand puts a spotlight on an organization or event in the community that supports people with disabilities and people and animals who are among the most vulnerable. I'm Dave Lawrence, and this week we are learning about Parkinson's disease and the many resources available for patients, loved ones, and healthcare professionals via the Hawaii Parkinson Association. There are a lot of ways to support them, too, including participating or volunteering at their walk that is coming up Sunday, November 3rd, 9 a.m. to noon at Magic Island in Ala Moana Beach Park in Honolulu. We'll hear about this event and also their need for trial and study volunteers, drug research, support groups, the way people can contribute to these, updates on the rapid advancements that are being made as they do research on Parkinson's, some of the valuable therapeutic physical activities they suggest, and of course, more about this fundraising, awareness-raising walk that's happening Sunday, November 3rd, 9 to noon at Magic Island. We're thrilled to welcome back the president of the Hawaii Parkinson Association, a returning guest. He's been with us a few times and have had the pleasure of even walking with him at their event that they do. It's Jerry Boster joining us. Hey, Jerry, good to see you and welcome back.
It's great to be here, Dave. Thanks for having me back. It was a lot of fun.
Totally welcome, man. It is a lot of fun and it's great to see you, man. And let's start because on Helping Hand, we talk about a lot of conditions that we try to get the word out there on. And let's make sure everyone joining us today knows more about what Parkinson's disease is. It's a progressive neurodegenerative condition, but if you can, explain when it begins to affect people, maybe some of the early symptoms or signs, and then detail the progression of it.
Sure. The Parkinson's average age of diagnosis is about 60 years of age, but it can be as early as in the 20s and even potentially younger. And the most common feature of Parkinson's is the tremor. That's the one that everybody knows about. That was one of the things that was first, my wife first noticed about me, was my left arm and left hand starting to tremor. And then I started hunching and shuffling along. We call it the Parkinson's shuffle. And really, the analogy I use is if you're driving a car and you pull up somewhere and you put the handbrake on, and then you try to go again, and your car's trying to go and it's shaking, but the handbrake is holding you in one position. Well, that's what's going on with Parkinson's, because you have a shortage of this chemical in your brain called levodopa. It's the same chemical that you get when you have a runner's high, but you have a shortage of it. And so you don't have full control over your body. And so when that happens, you lose control and you start shaking and you have a hard time walking and you freeze up and do things like that. Well, I was 47 when I was first diagnosed. It's becoming more and more common. And all the movement disorders are all closely related, Alzheimer's, Tourette's, Parkinson's. And so I say what I always tell people, if you start to shake, we used to think it was just because people were getting old. We now know that's not true. So if you start to shake, you need to get to your neurologist and, if possible, get to one of the specialist movement disorders, because it's only going to get worse. So what we try to do is, once it's diagnosed by a movement disorder, we try to get you into exercise classes. We try to make sure you're getting your meds that you need and getting out and being active, because the more active you are, the better off you are. Because that's one of the insidious things about when people turn 60, what are they doing? They're looking to retire. They get diagnosed with Parkinson's. And so what do they end up doing? Going home, and because you have to work through the five stages of grief, a lot of denial and depression. So people sit in front of the TV, don't do anything, and just sit there. And that is the absolute worst thing you can do. So we try to get people to come out as quickly as they can, get into our exercise classes, and we'll talk more about those later, and just become active again, because Parkinson's isn't a death sentence. And as I tell a lot of people, it's not cancer where you're going to be gone in a few months or potentially gone in a few months. Parkinson's is a decades-long disease. Michael J. Fox has had it for 35 years. I've known folks who ran marathons for 20 and 25 years. It's pretty amazing what you can do, but you have to be active. And so we encourage anybody, if you get diagnosis, which is never a fun thing, get in touch with us. Let us help you. Let us bring you into the fold and show you that you're not alone, and get out there and participate.
When you said, you were saying, I want to make sure I got this right, you were 47 when you were diagnosed.
Correct.
And that was considered early onset?
It is. If you're under the age of 50, you're considered early onset. And we have we're restarting a group that kind of died off. We're restarting a group of just early onset diagnosed patients. And the goal is for this group, because they're different than the 60, the retirees, these people are in the prime of their careers. They have children and they're much more active. So we want to gear that group to those people. And Glenn Higa, who's our admin, my admin sport and marketing guy, is going to be the support group leader, and they're going to do hikes. They're going to do, you know, activities like bowling. I mean, they're going to be doing your normal stuff, but you'll be doing it with other people that have the same challenges you do. So
that's very cool.
Yeah.
No, I like that. But I thought you said, and maybe I heard it wrong, that's happening more often. Is there more diagnosis of early onset, or is it seeming to have, are there more cases of early onset than previously?
You know, I don't think there's more cases. I think it's the education that we've been really pushing that's kicking in, and people are recognizing
what it is,
the symptoms much earlier.
Okay.
And so they're being diagnosed. We originally, last time they really took account, it was 5 to 10% of all Parkinson patients were early. Coming from the World Parkinson Congress, I think the number I was hearing 10 to 15%, and it's just because people are recognizing the symptoms much earlier. And so instead of letting it go and not figuring out what it is, they're getting in, getting treatment, getting diagnosed.
Right. And when you identify it, it creates a number. So that's how you'd start to have more people. It's not that there are more people getting it in early onset, but you're saying it's just because of the education and awareness of what it is, you can identify what you're seeing.
Right. And that's one of the challenges for the Kapuna population too, because a lot of times Parkinson's will be masked by other conditions in Kapuna, because a lot of the Kapuna have multiple challenges. And so they end up finding the Parkinson kind of last. But as we've been working the education piece and trying to train more medical professionals in Parkinson symptoms, we're finding out that there's a lot more Kapuna that have it too. And our diagnosis rate, we think, talking to the neurologists, they think they're catching about half of the people in the state that actually have Parkinson's are being diagnosed. And so there's still a lot of people out there.
Right.
So my encouragement is, if you think something's wrong, go to the doctor and make a nuisance of yourself. Push till you get a correct diagnosis.
You we will hear more about treatments and care for those with Parkinson's in a moment. But first, as a lead into that, and you mentioned it, you recently attended the World Parkinson Congress in Kyoto. Tell us about the event and some of the things that you learned there.
Yeah, every 3 years, the research side of the World all the Parkinson organizations in the world comes together to cross-pollinate ideas and research opportunities, as well as network. And so out in Kyoto in the first week of June, we had over 2,000 people from 65 countries that came together. And when you have that many, there was literally hundreds of presentations and roundtables and discussions going. And the way they quantify it is all these research organizations on their current projects put together a poster. And they show these posters off so that people know what's going on. Well, there was over 600 posters out in Kyoto alone, which trying to get through that many posters is really impossible. And we were actually pretty fortunate, because we live in Hawaii, which is not that far from Kyoto. We actually took a team. We had one of our neurologists, as well as four people from the Hawaii Parkinson Association. So we kind of tried to tag team and cover as much as we could. Glenn covered a lot of young onset stuff. Russ Boyer, our treasurer, was doing a lot of our normal stuff. Another gentleman was covering some other specialized stuff, where I was doing a lot of networking with the drug companies and the national organization. So we covered a lot of territory, but there was so much to see. So when they're going to put all the presentations and all the posters online, they're supposed to be, it just took them a while because there is so much. But one of the most fascinating things is there's a lot of discussion about this one protein that's causing a lot of problems called alpha-synuclein. That's the one that's killing off the dopamine-producing cells in the brain, so we expect a lot of that discussion. But the one discussion that I ended up getting into through my cousin, who sent me a note about an article, was about inflammation in the brain and inflammation in the stomach. And they're finding out the more your brain is inflamed, the more bad things happen. And so they've been using a chemical compound to artificially cool the brain to get rid of the inflammation. They did animal trials in mice, and it just about stopped Parkinson's in mice in its tracks.
Wow.
And the research is extremely promising. in either late this year or early next year, they're going to go into human trials. It's down in the University of Queensland in Australia, but it was fairly unique. There was only a couple of folks that are working in that area, but it's amazingly promising.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's unbelievable.
And so I talked to a couple of our trial folks here, and we're going to be in touch with the guys down in Queensland maybe to see if we can get some trials here in Hawaii as well.
Oh, that's a great with the Asia-Pacific connection. It's not that far to be able to make something happen there at least. And what would that mean? That people from here would travel there, or that the research would be done here?
The research would be done here. It would be led out of Australia, but what they do is it would be a double-blind test. And there's actually different levels. The first level is just safety, and they take a very small pool, and they have them take the medication to make sure it's safe. And while they're making sure it's safe, they're also kind of tracking to see how effective it is.
Right.
And then you get in phase two, you get a little bit larger crowd. Then phase three is your wide crowd.
I get it.
Phase two is tolerability. So you test how make sure it's safe. Then you see how people tolerate it. Then you see how effective it is. So they would send the medication up to here, and it would be people would be tested. They would see what stage their Parkinson is, and it'd all be measured, and there's a scale that they use. And then you go on to medication for a length of time, 9 months or 12 months. And then at the end, they measure you again to see if your Parkinson is checked and make sure see if you've had any safety issues. So they normally use double blind, placebo controlled trials. And so some people get it, some people don't. And you never know. I did a study on nicotine.
Yeah,
that we talked about before, and I just found out a few months ago that I was actually on the nicotine, even though it had no effect on me. But we didn't know till 3 or 4 years after the study was actually over.
But that's how they do it, to try to get accuracy.
Yeah, and make sure that you're not artificially reacting,
right?
Because you know or you don't, you know that if you're on or not on the trial,
right? To keep the testing as objective as possible.
And so there was, we made a lot of good connections in Kyoto. We're going to have lots of the drug companies and the national companies are partnering with us on some of our new initiatives, a lot of training stuff, talking to some of our local neurologists. One of the big things they want to do is get Parkinson training for our general medical folks. And that's a huge piece. And so the way we're going to be doing it is bring in experts from the drug companies and have the drug companies pay for all the training. And some people would think it's a conflict of interest with the drug companies because you're potentially going to be buying their products. But the more I work with the that is true of the sales side, but the scientific side of the drug companies are more interested in finding a cure than they actually are.
Yeah, they got to have a product that has some kind of work, and they got a lot of money to spend to help do the work. So no, they seem like a logical group to be researching it. Tell me about this Parkinson treatment triangle.
This is a term and a diagram that I have kind of pioneered. And when you look at it, it's kind of intuitive. It's all centered around treating the whole person, because you can't just treat one aspect. For people, you have to treat all the different aspects using all the different methods. And there's the old saying that it takes a village to raise a child. Well, in Parkinson's, it takes a team to treat a Parkinson patient. So the Parkinson treatment triangle consists of three sides. One is medication, and this includes deep brain stimulation, then exercise, and then wellness, which is diet, nutrition, spirituality, basically anything else that affects the way you think, your mental state. And all three of the sides are equally important. And if you're not balanced between the three sides, then you're not going to have effective treatment. And there's a quick story that brought this home recently. When I first was diagnosed and I worked through the five stages of grief, first event I did was the 2015 Parkinson Walk. And I put together a team. And there was a gentleman that I was competing against to be high fundraiser, and he and I developed a really good friendly relationship, and we were having a lot of fun. But then he kind of dropped off the radar, and I had heard through the grapevine that he was kind of deteriorating, having a lot of problems. And then this spring at our symposium, he popped back up like we hadn't lost any time. When I first met him, he had one of the rolling walkers, the triangle ones, and moving right along. And I'd heard that he had deteriorated to the point he couldn't hardly walk. But at our spring symposium, here he is with his walker, walking right along, talking no problem. And I got to talking to him, and what had happened was he got into a funk, got depressed, and stopped doing his exercises. And for about 18 months, he kind of had a bad spot. He was in a bad spot. And after about 18 months, he finally got himself out of it and got going again. And it took him a lot of work to get back up to where he was. But when he got his mind straight, he was able to get his exercise straight again, and it played in with his meds. And it was like he never took that 18-month hiatus. It was a lot of work to get there. But it shows that if your wellness, if your mind's not right, mm-hmm. it really affects your exercises.
It's like dominoes.
Kinda. It is. And they're also interlocked. And so when we talk about treatment, a lot of people always want to talk about one aspect or another. We have a lot of guys that are big into exercise, which is great. I mean, exercise is a key component of treating Parkinson's. And we have other people that also want to do is talk about the newest, latest, greatest meds out there. But they neglect a lot of the other stuff, the nutrition. And I was at a sport group meeting a couple weekends ago, and we had a nutritionist in talking about nutrition because it's so important. And this spring, our whole theme of our symposium was about wellness, trying to look at some of these other aspects of treatment. You've got to treat all three to make the whole body, to treat the whole body effectively. And that's why I show that it's a very simple treatment triangle, but it's very intuitive when you think it through, but all the sides are very important and they have to be balanced.
Right. So medication, exercise, and wellness.
Yeah. And that's what when I talk to people now, I explain the importance of all three sides to make their treatment regime effective. So
as in introducing you and in talking to you last year and in some of what we've been talking about today, actually too, a way to support the organization comes right in with this medication, and that is by people being trial and study volunteers, correct, to help make that happen.
Yes. Studies and trials are really important, and I kind of distinguish between the two because trials are usually drug trials. Studies are normally non-drug trials. And I've done both myself. I did a nicotine study, which I mentioned earlier, where I went on a nicotine patch to see if it had any effect on Parkinson's. But I also did a African drumming study.
Right.
We were trying to test out, see if it kept up strength and it kept up my coordination on my left arm, which is affected by Parkinson's. And the results were very promising, so they're going to try to do another expanded study there. But there's also observational online studies. I get emails asking me just what I'm eating, how I'm feeling, how I'm exercising, and things like that, just to track my symptoms. But the the drug trials, the human volunteers are the most important piece because without them, they never get off the ground. And a couple of the stats are 85% of clinical trials face delays and 30% never even get off the ground due to lack of volunteers. And when you think about that, what are the chances that one of those trials that never got off the ground might have a cure?
Right.
And that is, and it's almost criminal. And the other step that's really kind of scary is talked to a lot of people about trials, trying to get people in, and most people will say, yeah, I'd be willing to do that. But when it comes down to it, less than 10% actually do go into the trials. And there's a lot of reasons for that and a lot of valid reasons. And a lot of it has to do with education. People are afraid of what's going to happen because they're afraid of the potential side effects. And there's always side effects, potential side effects of medication. I look at it a little bit different way. I want to be on the cutting edge of that research and that medication. If there's something new and great coming along, man, I want to get a hold of that because I want to knock the hell out of this Parkinson's. And so I look at that in the risk reward.
The cost benefit, it outweighs it for you. I mean,
it really does.
And not all of these studies, just to jump in here, there are ways for volunteers to participate in not just the drug studies too, right? These other studies are just as important. And as you pointed out, they study things like exercise regimens and a whole host of other kinds of analysis is done. And you're saying more people who are listening today, like when I give the contact info, if they're willing to say, hey, any study that's coming up, I'd love to be a volunteer to help you make sure that thing gets off the ground. That'd be a great way for people to help. And they may never end up having to take drugs.
Absolutely. And especially a newly diagnosed, somebody that's recently diagnosed is like the holy grail because they haven't been maintained with a lot of the meds all along. But we have two organizations right now that are doing drug studies, and both of them are expanding the number of people to do more drug studies. Mm. That's Pacific Health Research and Education Institute. That's VA affiliated, but they take non-VA patients. Hawaii Pacific Neuroscience. And one of the partnerships that we just entered into with the University of Hawaii is they're going to be looking to do some research at the University of Hawaii on Parkinson's as well. So we're greatly expanding out our trials and the way we go about doing them and to get more people into them. But you're right, not every study involves a drug. So there's a lot of studies. In fact, they want a lot of people that don't have Parkinson's.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say. So for many people listening who are touched, you said something critical, which was a lot of these studies are almost ready to go. They just need more volunteers.
Yeah, and they need, if you don't have Parkinson's, it's okay because they need controls too. Right. They need how a normal person would react, and then they can have something to
gauge against or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's one huge way to, when we give contact info, to be able to support the organization with that. And what's the latest on the exercise too, as we were mentioning, which is also really good practical information for people, but also, as you were saying, it's this critical cog to understanding this disease.
Yeah. Exercise in general is good for anybody. But we try to do some things that are specific for Parkinson's. And so we've been concentrating. I've got a certified yoga instructor who's finishing up her occupational therapy certification.
Lindsay.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Finished up her OT certification. Is been doing yoga, a lot of training for yoga instructors specifically for Parkinson's, not only on Oahu, but there's a certified yoga instructor that she's partnering with over on Maui, and she's working on getting it over to Kauai and the Big Island as well.
So people who are listening on those islands who have that skill and are saying, hey, maybe I could use my yoga skills to help the organization. You'd
absolutely
love to hear.
Absolutely. And
great.
And we'll give them some specialized training. Boxing is a big craze. It started a couple of years ago. The name brand is called Rocksteady Boxing, but we use another one called Power Exercise, which incorporates some of the elements of boxing, but it's all about cardio and movement and balance, because the more you do, the better off you are. Richard Weinstein, who started up the bike group last year, found that he got on a bike after having Parkinson's, and he hadn't been on a bike in probably a couple decades, and he was kind of unsteady. But the longer he's been riding bikes, he's up doing races now.
Amazing.
And I think his longest race was 40 or 50 kilometers and up on the North Shore. They do, him and the guys that he does the bike group with every Sunday out on Lagoon Drive behind the airport, they've been doing a lot of these longer races and relays. We've been sponsoring, Hawaii Parkinson's Association sponsoring him as a team, to go in, and not only does it help other charities, but it also helps get our name out. And the last one is we do Parkinson's-specific training at the YMCA. Mm. YMCA is a huge, every year we go in and do train the trainers to make sure their trainers are up to speed. But we're also looking to partner with some of the gyms. We've actually already partnered with some, and we're trying to partner with more, just because they're getting a lot of Parkinson patients coming in, and we want them to be able to understand how to deal with Parkinson patients.
So people who have a sports background or a coaching background and are particularly touched by this and realize, wow, I could play a role in assisting this organization, because a lot of this has to do with exercise, and that's an area these people already have expertise in, you could hear from them too as volunteers.
Absolutely. We're always looking for volunteers, and exercise being such a huge part of the Parkinson treatment regime in the triangle, need to contact Lindsay. She's at exercise@parkinsonshawaii.org. She coordinates it all, but we run classes periodically to train the trainers. We get you in. The only condition we put on you is if you take our class, we ask you to teach one Parkinson class, just one single Parkinson class, sometime in the next year is kind of payback for our time and effort to train you.
So and that's a real open door.
It is, and it's not a lot of investment on their part.
Right. No, it is. And on the same note, you have down here now, I'm thinking of some of the, because as you said with the drumming, there's lots of ways, there's lots of therapeutic things we can engage in, and sometimes we don't realize necessarily what they are. Certainly exercise, we all could use a lot more of, and there are different ways to exercise. You're recruiting for a Parkinson choir.
We are. There are multiple choirs throughout the world, and at the Parkinson Congress, they actually performed. They practiced. They were from multiple countries. I think it was five or six different countries. And they used FaceTime and Skype and everything to practice. So they used technology means. And they got together and they practiced once or twice, actually, before the opening ceremonies. And it was, I mean, it was a big group. It was 50 or 60. And kind of concurrent with that, our treasurer, Russ Boyer, had seen some articles. And so he talked to a gentleman named Daniel Heathcock, who happens to be the nephew, the son-in-law of one of our movement disorder neurologists. And Daniel's a choir director, and so he got real excited up and fired up, and so he's recruiting. He's recruiting right now, and they're going to start practices in September, and out in Iowa for an hour once a week, and their first performance is actually going to be at the walk.
So we can put their contact info in at the end too for this, because I have that, and that's just another way that a great way to support the organization. And a great way for people who are inspired, maybe we even have a music background, who want to get in touch with you and say, how could I use what I'm doing to support the organization?
Yeah, and one of the, and this is a kind of a targeted thing, besides just the exercise and enjoyment, one of the symptoms of Parkinson's is a lot of people basically lose their voice. They lose the ability to speak, and they get slow and soft, and you can barely hear them. So we teach them what's called Big and Loud. It's LSVT program, how to speak. Again, and this is another way to get after that specific symptom.
Sure.
And when I was doing the African drumming study, a number of the people in there had this condition, and they were looking how to get beyond that. And a lot of the speech therapists charge a fair amount of money for official speech therapy, which may or may not be covered by your insurance. So the choir itself, teaching you how to sing and get out there and project your voice,
is a good deal.
Yeah, it's free. I just, yesterday, in fact, I went and bought 10 music stands for Daniel, and he's getting music from the Windward Choral Society. He's in a partnership with them. They're going to do a holiday. They're already planning a holiday joint performance.
That's something that's therapeutic on multiple levels,
quite frankly.
Really is. When you talk about it like that. That's...
When I first got into the African drumming study, I'm not a musician, and I'm not very rhythmic to begin with. And so I was very kind of trepidation, I guess. I mean, I was kind of scared of it.
Sure.
But I was kind of challenged at the same time. Put my mouth where.
Yeah, put your money where your mouth is. And there's some fraternity, though, that comes together because you're doing it with other cats. And
it was also really interesting because one of the things that drummers do is they do a lot of bilateral exercises. They'll do a lot of mirror stuff. They'll do with right hand, then with left hand, then they go left hand, then the right hand. It's the same stuff. And they're building cross hemisphere synapses, as well as trying to keep up strength and dexterity in your affected arm. And I found out over the course of about 3 months that it was actually working in me. I was actually noticing that my left hand was actually becoming better at doing stuff. Mm. And unfortunately, I've been tardy and not kept that up, but they're trying to get a grant to expand it out to 5 groups of 10 from 1 group of 10. And if they do that, I'll probably go back into it just because
it was effective.
It really was. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, and that's part of the exercise. You have to find out what works for you.
Right.
And for me, I'm not the guy that goes out there, especially since I just had joint replacements in both my knees. I can't go out and do a lot of the heavy aerobic stuff.
Right.
We're talking about me getting back into the pool because I used to swim when I was young. So I may get back into the pool since that's not so hard on the knees. But this would be good for the arms and the hands and the brain. So,
well, on that note of, I guess that's a good segue into what the Hawaii Parkinson Association does to help out newly diagnosed folks. Before we get to the walk, I know there's a number of things you've tried to do to help people who are facing a new diagnosis?
Yeah, one of the biggest challenge for any person that receives a significant diagnosis is working through the stages of grief. I mentioned it a couple times already, and it affected me too. And we estimate that when a person's diagnosed with Parkinson's, they go out of circulation for 12 to 18 months, which is a long time. And so we're trying to shorten that. And so last year, talking to Pat Bemis, our head of our support groups, I had kind of an epiphany on the newly diagnosed side. And so we started up a newly diagnosed patient program. And the first part was providing information kits to those who are newly diagnosed. And newly diagnosed right now, we're kind of using it in loose terms. That most people think it's within, you know, you've been diagnosed in the last year or so. But we also take it to mean if you have not been engaged with the Parkinson Society or Parkinson Association, even if it's more than a year, we still consider you newly diagnosed because you're not using our resources and not working, being treated to your capacity. And so we try to push out a basic information kit, and we have various sources from the drug companies, from the Davis Finney Foundation, from the Parkinson Foundation. And we try to give you basic information about the condition, about treatment, and how to proceed, and so that you live a better life. And then as you progress, then we can kind of add things. One of the things that we've recently added to the kit is what's called an aware and care kit. I was accepted into the Parkinson Foundation Aware and Care Ambassador Program. I'm the only one in Hawaii right now because it's a pilot program. But the aware and care kit is, you set it up, you put your meds in there, and you put all the instructions about when you take your meds and what the meds are. So that if you have to go to the hospital for whatever reason, planned or unplanned, you just grab your kit and you take your meds with you. Because the whole thing about for most chronic care patients is you need the right meds on time every time. And if you don't have this information, then you get behind on your meds. And then it starts, especially if they don't recognize you have a problem. And one of the things in the kit is the Parkinson Alert med bracelet that I wear. There's one in every kit, so to alert the medical people that you actually have a condition so that they can go looking for the information on what kind of treatment you should get. And if you have your kit, you can take it in and you show them your instructions. Now, there is a challenge right now. A lot of hospitals do not like you to bring in meds from the outside because they don't know what, they truly don't know what they are. So when you set up your kit, you have to have some of the original bottles with the original paperwork they give you at the pharmacy. I'm going to add a letter from my doctor, and I tested this personally when I had my knee replacement earlier this month, and I talked to my doctors ahead of time. I talked to the surgical admission center ahead of time, and I had it all set up, but it was still when we got after surgery, went to the floor where I stayed overnight, still had to work through it with the floor nurses who had to go back to my doctor to get permission for me to take my own meds.
Right.
Because one of the challenges they're finding, especially if you're taking a name brand medication and they give you a generic substitute, the effects are different, even though the active ingredients may be similar or the same. Nationwide, they're finding that and some people have adverse reactions, other people just don't have the same reaction. And then what we're finding even more so is that even among generics, they're not all the same. And some of the inactive ingredients cause different reactions. So what you need to be taking is the medication that your body is used to every time. And so one of the things we're doing is we're trying to educate the medical community through the neurologist, through my own contacts, so that when you show up with your Parkinson Aware and Care kit, they say, okay, I recognize that kit. And let me see your sheet to tell me what meds you're taking.
Right, so they get the exact version of that med.
Right.
Instead of some generic version, which they mean well, but it may not have the same effect.
Correct. And so what the result was when I was in the hospital, and I was at Tripler, and when we worked through it and I got on my meds, the only thing I had to do was when I was taking my meds and I'd given them my time schedule, I had to tell them that, yes, I took my meds on time. These are the ones, in fact, I took. So that's been the latest addition to our newly diagnosed.
It's an important thing, and it shows the complexities with managing a condition like this that people may not even realize, the additional complexities, you know, as if having it wasn't enough.
And the next step that we're actually taking, hopefully looking either in August or September, we're going to start an orientation meeting once a quarter up at St. Francis at Liliha at either Hawaii Pacific Neuroscience or in the new Kapuna Village, Lanai. We're still working that out. We're going to get the newly diagnosed folks together, and we'll present them with some of the new resources that are available to them. Just give them some information and let them kind of assimilate it as at whatever pace. If they've got questions, we'll have a neurologist there to talk to them. Pat Bemis, the support group leader, will talk to them. Lindsay will talk to them. I'll talk to them. And it's all about just giving them the tools they need for the treatment. So that's our newly diagnosed patient program. There will probably be stuff that will follow on, but we haven't. That's as far as we've got so far.
That's a lot. It's a lot that you're doing locally. There's a lot of ways. You've outlined a lot of ways that people can support you guys, but certainly a primary method for the general public, and certainly on your outreach side, is the walk, which is Sunday, November 3rd, 9 to noon, right in the heart of Honolulu at Ala Moana Beach Park on Magic Island. Give a little idea for folks. Obviously, they know there's a walk, but they may not realize how you raise funds that way with the walk and how people can tap into it to be philanthropic and other things that may be happening.
The walk is our primary fundraiser. We're not a big organization. We are a 501c3, so I'm not afraid to go ahead and talk money on the radio, because it's, if you go to the state website, you could actually see it for yourself with our tax returns. We're about $75,000 to $80,000 a year, and the walk we raised about $50,000 of that. So I mean, it's, you can see it's vast preponderance of our money. And what we do is we have people form teams to walk itself. Like I have Team Sailor Blue, because I'm a retired Navy guy, and so I was a sailor that sailed the ocean blue for a lot of years. And I go out and I ask kindly, and a lot of times I call it twisting people's arms. I talk to a lot of people about donating to my team, but also to just the walk in general. So if people just want to make a contribution to the walk, or to the organization, we'll provide that information at the end. But you can just go onto our website, and you can either mail in a donation, or you send a donation through the credit card system. And there's a number that a lot of times they use to denote how much admin costs you have versus how much is going into the patients. And our last measure was 26% goes into admin overhead costs, which the standard is usually about 25%. So we're changing some of our business practices to get that 26% down. My goal this year is to get it under 20, because the more I get, then the more I can put into patient programs.
Right.
And it is paying off, because everything we do for the Parkinson patients is free of cost. We do not charge for any of the materials we provide, whether we mail them to you or hand them to you in person, or all the training that goes for all the instructors, that's all free of cost as well. And so everything we do is free for the patients and the people that help the patients. And so that's why it's really important. And we're doing pretty good. I mean, we've got a lot of stuff going on. One thing I would like to mention is the Young at Heart Expo. It used to be called the Good Life Senior Expo at the Blaisdell, but it's now I think they changed change of management. So it's a Young at Heart Expo at the Blaisdell from 20 to 22 September, 8:30 to 4:30. We will have a full booth there this year with all of our materials, wear and care kits, Davis Finney Foundation books, Parkinson Foundation books. I mean, we're going to have a lot of the free resources there, as well as some stuff from some of our drug companies, fun stuff like pens and shoehorns and some other stuff that they use for advertising that they just give us. But it's a great place to come down and talk to us. 20,000 people come through the door, and so we'll be there all 3 days with our own booth to make sure that we're available to talk to them. Then at the walk, if you want to know more information or you can't make to the Young at Heart Expo, one of the things we have at the walk, besides the actual walk itself, is we have a resource area, and we bring in we have subject matter experts. We're going to have several neurologists there that'll be available to answer questions. We're going to have a lot of tables there with physical therapists, occupational therapists, home care, good foods. I'm hoping to have Soter Home Mobility there. They're the ones that provide vehicles to the handy van program, but they also have a lot of programs for individuals, and they have including financing and things like that. So I've been talking to them and hoping to have them there. So we're reaching out to anybody that deals with Parkinson's in any way, shape, or form. We're trying to get them to have a presence. So if anybody has any questions about your home and renovations and transportation, as well as the medical and physical therapy, occupational therapy, kind of a one-stop shopping. So we'll have two or three tents of tables of a lot of expert, knowledgeable people. And one of the best things about the walk is it's in the morning from 9 to 12, so it doesn't kill your whole day. By the time you get to lunch, it's over and you can go on with the rest of your day.
And you've done something good.
Yeah, you've done something good. So, and we do, if you come out that day and you want to register for the walk that day, we take that same day registrations. And if anybody that donates $100 gets a free t-shirt, so.
When you talk about all of those resources that are there that people can take advantage of with booths and talking to folks at their website, there is a calendar under upcoming events that is also jam-packed with resources and support groups, classes, right?
It is. It's amazing how much stuff we're doing.
So, I mean, there are a lot of resources for this organization, both that you will find there on site, but that you can also find at their website. Well, let me give you contact information. It's parkinsonshawaii.org to reach them online to be able to find the calendar of upcoming events that I was just describing. You can give them a call, 808-219-8874, 808-219-8874. Send an email, info@parkinsonshawaii.org, to reach them online if you have a question or you have a reach out to them with one of the many ways that Jerry has described that you can help them and be supportive in the community. We have the full interview, the radio feature, all the contact information also waiting for you at hawaiipublicradio.org, where you can hear everything that we talked about today and more. What else did we not get in there that you want to get in there before we wrap it up?
Just two things. The economic burden piece is, that's a huge piece. A lot of people.
Right. Like $50,000 a person just to deal with this disease per year.
Per year, both in direct and indirect costs. And the number of people in Hawaii that are diagnosed is right around 7,000 is our estimate, with another 7,000 undiagnosed. So the 7,000 times $50,000 a person, $350 million just is what it costs just Hawaii. Just Hawaii. So that's why it's so important, the research, the treatment, the healthy, living healthy is a huge piece of that for the Parkinson patients. The healthier you live, the less your treatment you're going to have to receive, and the better off you are, and better quality of life. And so it all plays together, and it's absolutely huge. The last thing I always try to emphasize to everybody, especially the newly diagnosed Parkinson patients, and this is the thought I always try to leave them with, is you are not alone. I've been through the diagnosis, so please reach out. And if nothing else, call me. I spend a fair amount of time on the phone just talking to people about ways we can help them. But the first thing I want to emphasize, and I'll finish this up with a story, is if you get a diagnosis from a general neurologist or anybody that's not a movement disorder specialist, get a second opinion by a movement disorder specialist. And I say this because last fall, somebody I work with was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And even though we worked together, it took him a while to work through the five stages. And so about 6 months later, he came to me and says, "Hey, okay, I'm ready to deal with it now. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's." So the first question I asked him was, "Have you seen a specialist?" He said, "No." And I says, "Well, let's get you in to see a specialist to confirm the diagnosis." Because being a symptomatic-based condition, diagnosis is hard. So there's no blood tests or urine tests or anything.
Right, you can confuse it, you're saying, with some other stuff.
Right, and so I got him in to see the specialist, and he came back and saw me the next day and said, "Hey, I spent 4.5 hours with the specialist, and guess what? I don't have Parkinson's." He goes, "I have essential tremors," which is something completely different, but can kind of look like Parkinson's. And I was jumping up and down for joy with him, because that is such a great feeling, and it's a huge load off of his mind. He had some family history of essential tremor, so he knew how to deal with it, and it typically doesn't progress like Parkinson's does. And so it's nothing against the non-trained folks, it's just they don't have the specialized skills that the movement disorder guy does. or gal. So get in to see the movement disorder specialist and confirm the diagnosis. That's always your first step. Get that second opinion. And that's what I did. I actually had a second, then I ended up with a third just kind of by happen chance as I was going into my nicotine study. But it's really important to make sure that you get it, because a lot of the treatment is predicated on having an accurate diagnosis.
Right.
And if they start treating you for something you don't have, it can screw you up just as much as if they didn't. So,
not to mention the huge psychological impact, you're saying, of having somebody diagnose you with something and then you find out you don't have that. That's a great lesson. And a harrowing kind of thing when you have a condition like that. Similarly with Alzheimer's, because they just had the International Alzheimer's Conference in Los Angeles not long ago, and I was talking about it on the air, and there was a gentleman there who, because they're trying really hard to come up with this new test, a possible blood test that would work, and it was a similar story, and this gentleman had been said he had it, then he didn't, then he did, then he didn't, and it turned out he didn't, and he had another condition. So
they're working on some diagnostic tools, and they're getting pretty close on a couple of them. Smell, proteins and tears, eye movements, some different measures, but they're all still in testing. Nothing is
right, which means you still need to follow your advice, which is get a specialist to confirm whatever anyone else has said. It is president of the Hawaii Parkinson Association, Jerry Boster, who is also a United States Navy vet. How many years did you serve for us?
29.
Thank you for your service there, of course, and you're welcome. And thanks so much for being an inspiring face of the Hawaii Parkinson Association and coming down here, sharing all this valuable information, and being a trooper and being there for people and reminding them they definitely are not alone. Grateful to get you to put you on Helping Hand. It means a whole lot to me. So thank you so much that you'd come down here and do this with me.
No, thanks so much for having us. This is such a valuable tool for us and on getting the word out to more and more people. So thanks again.